Mets fans through the years. How would you describe that relationship through the years as an opposing player?
Yeah, it was fun. I think my first couple of full seasons, I was maybe a little on the immature side, and I had some fun. But obviously, it's a passionate fan base, and I'm excited to play hard for them.
When you gain so many games in the standings, and get in a playoff race, what does that do for a player?
It's what you play for. You want to be a part of a playoff race and winning baseball games. It's what you've always wanted since you started playing this game.
I'm on with Mets.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, July the 28th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Well, I told you it would be a fascinating week. Appointment television on Friday night with Kodai Senga. The Mets did not disappoint. Baseball, as always, at this time of the year, does not disappoint. Here we are, just a couple of days. About 48 hours or so to the trade deadline. It's Sunday evening. Who knows while we're on the air what's going to happen. But welcome to another edition of the show. We'll be doing something a little different today. Two-parter today. Two segments, but I'm not going to hold up the second segment for the first. I'm going to do something different. So we're going to recap where the Mets are at. I'll give you some of my thoughts on the deals that have been made and the deadline. And then in part two, we announced, and it's free for everybody, so even if you're not a paid subscriber, you can still get it and review it. The Talking Mets top prospects broken up into positions and pitchers, added a little wrinkle about everything. So go check it out. Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I got some help from a contributor that's been helping me out a little bit on the back end, David Mills. A friend of the program, has done radio in his career, has a little bit of insight into player development. And, David's going to come on and he and I are going to host the second hour and talk about our prospect list and get into the deadline, who the Mets should maybe hold on to, who maybe they should dangle out there, where they stack up with other organizations. Some of our thoughts here from our point of view as we continue to be the bridge, the voice between the fans and the media is what we pride ourselves to be here at the Talking Mets podcast. And the first thing I want to do to kick it off here before I get into the meat and potatoes of what happened in this week in Mets land is offer a little bit of an apology to the fan base. Now, me and the fan base have always had an interesting relationship because no secret, I'm a Mets fan. I grew up a Mets fan. And when I put this show together after years of trying to figure out where, let's use the term market inefficiency of radio and podcasting came out, I said there's a lot of Mets podcasts, usually when the team is good, not as many when they're bad, and not as many early on in the game when I started back, when Jose Reyes was manning shortstop for the Mets. And not many can balance the duality of, fan and responsible journalism. And sometimes what happens with that is I go pretty hard on Mets fans because it's almost like you know who they are. You're one of them. You're very familiar with the behaviors of the fan base. So sometimes, just like a family member, you're always going to be harder on your son or your brother, big brother, little brother, whatever you want to call it. And you start to say things that, normally wouldn't be as in your face, maybe if you were talking about other fan bases doing a similar type of generic sports show, New York sports show, whatever. And from time to time over the years, I've given Mets fans an incredible amount of praise. I've given them an incredible amount of criticism. And this has not been something new. And when they've gotten credit by me, I've gone out of my way to give them credit. When there's been time to criticize them, I've gone out of my way to criticize them. And this past April, especially that first couple of weeks, I just thought the Mets fans were awful. They were awful and negative. And, you know, even down the stretch in 2022, I thought they did a bad job. And, you know, the constant tension that you could cut with a knife, how they approach the postseason games, how they approach basically waiting for another shoe to fall on their head, another anvil to fall on them. I mean, we've talked about it. We've talked about the yoke. We've talked about the burden of this franchise and so many of the unfulfilled promises. But I will say this. They came out, and I wasn't in the ballpark this weekend, but I know those who have been. I watched it on TV. Plenty of video from those who were at the ballpark. Yeah, they got muted the last 2 days thanks to some really good Braves pitching. And that will happen. I mean, the Braves put on a clinic the last couple of days of how to win on the road. You know, you're facing potentially a really damaging series. You go out there, you get good pitching, and you score some runs. You put some points on the board early. You take the crowd out of the game and look up, and you split a series that looked like you were destined to not only, you know, lose, but maybe lose the whole thing. And that will mute a crowd. But on Thursday and Friday, especially that bottom half of the inning on Friday night when the Mets scored 7 runs, what was at the bottom of the third inning. I mean, that place is electric. And I think the fans, whether it be the Grimace or OMG or maybe some of the energy that an Alvarez and a Vientos and the Mets offense has brought, and I think that's one of the things you can see. When you have a team that can score and put points up on the board, it really can invigorate a crowd. You know, I love 2-1, 1-0 games, love defense up the middle and pitching, but you want to get a crowd into a game, offense will do it. That'll get a crowd into the game in a quick and in a big league way. So I thought the Mets fans did great. Let's see how the rest of the season goes. The hope here is that maybe this club, with their approach ever since, like I said, you know, whether it be Strawberry's challenge to them during his retirement number speech, or the Grimace, or the Jorge Lopez incident, and JD Martinez saying, screw it, nobody thinks we're going to win, let's just go out there and blankety blanket. You know, maybe they're taking like a major league with Jake Taylor approach here and go, let's just win the whole thing. I don't know what they're what really was the tonic here, but this club has you know, turned things around. They were the first wild card for a hot minute for about 24 hours. They're in this muck now of really 5 teams with 3 postseason spots, and I think it's going to be like that for a while, and it's going to be like that where buckle up. Every loss is going to be magnified and hurt. Every win is going to be joyous. Every winning streak is going to put them in a very good position. Every even 2-game losing streak like they just had is going to put them in a worse position. And ultimately, I think it could come down when you have teams so tightly bunched together. And in a way, if you assess them with their strengths and weaknesses, they're very similar, these teams. I can't say even Atlanta, and I know a lot of that has to do with some of the injuries they've had, but everybody seems to be rather equal, and you could rack and stack them anyway. And that includes going all the way down to teams like the Pirates in some way, shape, or form. That really the last 10 days of the season, I said this last week, is probably what is going to decide this thing. And now if you're a Mets fan, you don't want to hear that. You want to see them continue to win 7 out of 10, 6 out of 10, maybe 8 out of 10. They have a critical West Coast trip. August is going to be a brutal month with a couple of really tough road trips. Go out to the West Coast a couple of times, and including, I believe, they got to go out to San Diego. So this is not going to be easy. And, you know, the fun has just begun here. It really has just begun. But you really didn't think, despite all the goodwill, really since that glove went into the stands by Jorge Lopez, you didn't think that the yoke was just going to take a vacation and say, all right, that's it. You know, that burden, you know what, I've been doing this since 1987. I'm tired. I'm done. No, it curses or burdens or whatever you want to call them. The Cubs fans know it. The Red Sox fans know it. New York Hockey Rangers fans know it. We could go on and on. Cleveland Browns fans, maybe you want to put them in there. Whatever the fan base is, they know these things don't go away automatically or organically. They have to be destroyed. I mean, if you want to just use an analogy, it's no different than putting a vampire out. You got to put that vampire down. You got to drive a stake in that vampire's heart. And I know this all sounds goofy, but truthfully, that's how this thing ends, with the Mets finally putting it in the closet once and for all. And it will end with a championship. And I don't know if this club is going to do it, But, you know, the hope is with Stearns and with Cohen's money and Stearns at the helm for at least the next 5 years, the Mets come pretty damn close or turn this thing around in a big way. And this is like Stearns' first real challenge. Now, the old song from Queen, "We Are the Champions, No Bed of Roses, No Pleasure Cruise," I mean, that pretty much succinctly puts together any run to anything special, a playoff spot, a championship, whatever. And around the sixth inning, I mean, here I was, had total mud on my face. I really thought Kodai Senga was going to go out there, and I know he gave up an early home run to Adam Duvall, and I figured he was going to walk the ballpark. He didn't like what you saw in his rehab start in Syracuse, but quite the contrary. I mean, he had a heavy fastball that they couldn't hit. His ghost fork was outstanding. Struck out 9 in 5 innings. Dare to dream. Well, did the Mets just acquire an ace that they had already in their back pocket for nothing? And then this wacky, wonky calf injury, the yolk pops its head up again. 60-day DL stint for Senga. He's done for the regular season. Whether or not you see him in the postseason remains to be seen. I think that's highly unlikely with the kind of maintenance a pitcher like Senga requires. And now that puts the Mets where they're at with 2 days left, about 48 hours left before the trade deadline. Mets are right in there, you know, depending if Arizona wins as of this show, whether they'll be right out of the wild card race or, squish ahead as they were half game, I believe, ahead of the Diamondbacks going into today's action. And, we'll see what David Stearns has up his sleeve. But right now, a couple of big moves. We already know about the Maton move. That has paid some dividends already just for money and a player to be named later. Not sure who that player will be with the Mets kind of taking on some money there. Got to think it's not that punishing. Giving up Tyler Stewart, who in our ranking was a top 10 starting pitcher for the Mets, outside of the top 5, but top 10. Somebody has profiled as maybe back in the rotation type, Trevor Williams type. That was the cost for Jesse Winker and renting Jesse Winker and his really what has been an elite bat this past year. I mean, he's looked like the all-star Jesse Winker from 2021, the player that Seattle brought over trying to get a big bat in the middle of their lineup. The guy that always seemed to get a big hit in a big spot when the Mets played him. He couldn't get him out. High on base guy, has power, maybe not the best defensively, but should fit really well in a lineup that at one point, I know it's come back down to earth, but was averaging almost 7 runs a game. This is a serious lineup. This is a lineup that should, and I know that they've had some regression to the mean, and we expected that. We talked about that. But this is a lineup that should not struggle, even against good pitching, scoring 4 or 5 runs a game. They get 4 or 5 runs a game. The blueprint since April we've talked about is, okay, get your 5 or 6 innings, 2 or 3 runs from your starters, and then go to the bullpen. Basically what they did in the Bronx against the Yankees, although they scored a ton more than just 5 or 6 runs. Quite the contrary, they scored, obviously they won a 3-2 game, but then the second game they blew them out. So the question now is, as you get to the trade deadline here, as you start to see some of the warts with the starting rotation, with the McGill and Peterson outings, with the Senga injury, with the fact that now you're basically relying on a big three of Quintana, Severino, and Manaea, and Christian Scott is probably going to be done for the year. You're probably not going to see him. The real question is, should the Mets go out and get themselves a starting pitcher now? You would think, just by logic, being that they acquired Stanek, I know Ryan Stanek had a bad outing, but he's still an arm that, as recently as a couple of years ago, was a big part of a Houston team that was on its way to winning a championship and setting up in that bullpen. Maton, part of that bullpen. You should have Nunez, who's on the injured list, back. And I guess the real question, and that's part of this whole thing here, decisions, is does Buto go back to the rotation? Does Buto go back to the starting rotation? And do you take what has been a Jabba Chamberlain, Seth Lugo type of performance out of the bullpen out of there? I think that that's very damaging. And you have no guarantee that he's built up. Is he no more than a 5-inning, 3-run guy, 6-inning, 3-run guy? Enough that really what you need with this team, but it also rips away from the bullpen. And can you acquire a bullpen arm? And I think that's really where the decisions go here. Right now, the prices are very expensive. You saw for Jason Adams out of Tampa. The Padres had to give up three, and I know that Lesko, from reports, has struggled since Tommy John surgery and can't throw strikes. Like every other big stuff pitcher, it seems, in the minor leagues, can throw hard but can't find the strike zone. But they gave up three top prospects for a reliever. I understand a reliever with control, but a reliever nonetheless. But even rentals, you're hearing reports, rentals are going to cost a couple of prospects. And then you get into the names that everybody's talking about, and I'm talking about impactful starting pitching names. Because personally, I don't think a Paul Blackburn, a below league average pitcher, or J.P. Sears, a below league average pitcher, I just don't see how that's different than what the Mets have right now. I don't see how that's different than Peterson and McGill. I really don't, unless the Mets see something in their repertoire, just like the Dodgers have over the years, just like the Astros have over the years, which say, I could turn that guy into something better or more. And if they think so, you know what? You got all these smart guys they hired. You're spending all this money on technology in the pitching lab. You have to, trust them. We don't have that information. They do. But you start to look then at other guys, money guys, guys that are solid but will require you taking on some money and a big tax bill. That's the Jose Barrioses and Chris Bassett, who I think is an outstanding potential acquisition. Does Toronto want to hold on to him for next year? Do they want to reboot and potentially compete for a playoff spot? In a three wild card race, that's very likely, especially for a team that is owned by a big company. And Rodgers, I don't see them doing a tanking situation. And Bassett and Barrios, guys who you would have to take on, in the case of Barrios, a lot of money. Does that make more sense? Because the prospect cap will be less. But this idea, I mean, if relievers are going to cost you a couple of top 10 prospects, top 15, let's say, what makes you think you could get an Eric Fetty, a Garrett Crochet? Garrett Crochet is one of the best, is the best pitcher statistically in baseball right now. Even Jack Flaherty, a guy that's had some serious injuries, a guy that was available, like, got, just like all these other injured players, league average guys, which he was coming into this season. He used to be an elite top of the rotation guy. You said to yourself this offseason, do I really want to take a chance? I think Flaherty's had shoulder issues. A guy like that, who's a rental, is going to cost you quite a bit. And it's going to be painful. And you start to look at the names, and we'll talk about them in the back half of the show. The Nathan McClains and the Blade Tidwells and the Jonah Tongs. And yeah, even though he's injured, Christian Scott, Brandon Sproat. If you think you're going to get any of the top pitchers that I just named, Crochet, Fetty, Flaherty, and one of those guys is not going back, I got news for you. It ain't happening. And I know that, the Mets aren't going to give out any information. There's going to be no leaks. So you really have no idea. I mean, the fact that the media over the past 2 months has been saying, well, the Mets are going to thread the needle. They'll sell some starters and also contend and compete. It's like, that didn't make any sense. Either the Mets were going to be in it, especially with all the chemistry they've built up with this club. And you can see just with the excitement with the story about how excited the clubhouse got when Jesse Winker came in, this club knowing they needed another bat, they needed one more bat, the reaction of a Pete Alonso. That's the part of the trade deadline that analytics doesn't capture. It's something that Stearns was on the other side of a couple of years ago when he traded Josh Hader, and totally dismissed the fact that it took the life out of that clubhouse. And now the Mets are doing the opposite. They're trying to bring in. And that's really where this is going to be the real needle to thread, is how much prospect capital are they willing to give up to make a big deal for a starting pitcher or reliever? Estevez, a guy that I heard they were hot and bothered over, off the board. Philadelphia gave him a couple of really good prospects for. The Mets are going to have a painful, they haven't had a painful transaction. Maybe Tyler Stewart is a little bit of pain. Maybe Winker plays well or doesn't play well. Let's say even if he does play well, and then he's a free agent and he gets a deal, and who knows if there's even room for him here with Nimmo, and obviously you might want to bring Bader back. You still have Marte under contract. I always think there's a way to find room for good hitters, and I'm sure Winker is a guy that if he excels here and shows that he's back in form, whatever's ailed him that made him so poor of a hitter with Seattle and even with Milwaukee when they acquired him last year. That to me, if he's back, that could be a very valuable hitter, clutch hitter, guy who gets on base. Not the best defensively. But, you know, that to me, I mean, that could be damaging, giving up a Tyler Stewart. What if Stewart goes out and is a solid back end of the rotation arm, a Trevor Williams type? There's value there. Mets could use those guys. You've seen what pitching depth and how important it could be. But you got to give up something to get something. You don't know what Maton is. And then Stanek, you gave up what really was a organizational, at this point, org filler. Best case, you gave up someone that could be a 4A guy, a shuttle guy, or backup outfielder. Who knows what he turns into? You know what? If he turns into something, God bless Rylan Thompson. But, you know, that's just part of it. So the Mets haven't given up anything yet. But that's about to change. Because they're going to do one of two things now. Stearns, over the next 48 hours, either he's going to continue to do some kind of value shopping, I'll call it. Another bullpen arm like a Stanek. Maybe that's Luis Garcia from Anaheim. Maybe he will cost a little less. Maybe he waits all the way up to the deadline and says, you know what? I'm not getting involved in these big stakes, these high prices. I just can't see him going after those top pitchers unless he is committed. Now, guys like Crochet and Fetty has another year of control. There's value to giving up maybe a McClain, a Cade Morris or something like that. I have a feeling the Mets are going to have to make the Sprouts and the Jonah Tongs and maybe even the Christian Scotts off limits. Was that hamper them in these talks? I mean, it remains to be seen. But those are the names that teams are going to ask for. You're already hearing it. And they're not just going to ask for them for starters. You're going to start to have, let's say Texas finally comes to Jesus here, so to speak, baseball Jesus, and says, you know, we're not going anywhere. They're in a very similar situation to how the Mets were last year when they got Max Scherzer. Does finally Kirby Yates and David Robertson, two of the better arms out of the bullpen available, become available? Does Robertson cost a little less because of his age? Maybe Yates with his injury history? Do you know? And I don't know if they would want a Brett Beatty, because that's another name that's going to go out there. Does Texas even have a need since they have a third baseman? They have Josh Smith, who they got from the Yankees. I believe they got him in the Joey Gallo deal. I mean, do they even want that? Do they want Acuna back? Acuna? Do they want Acuna back? They have Marcus Semien and Corey Sager. I have a feeling that those guys are going to be manning those positions for a long time. So to get a match, and you know, I love how people come out and content creators come out and say, well, the Mets could trade Beatty, they could trade Acuna, I don't want them to trade this, trade that. Guess what? To match up, you have to also look at the needs of an organization. This is so hard because right now the decision is one, is how much pain is Stearns willing to endure in prospect capital? And the return, even with the flattery or a Fetty or a Crochet in terms of injury risk, fit, I mean, and Crochet's got all these like demands, coming over from his agent, which is a bit of a turnoff, to be honest. And you look at all this and you say to yourself, this is a tough decision because the Mets have prospect capital to get a deal done. I mean, they could do what San Diego did with Jason Adams, I believe, but they're going to start to tear away at a system that they finally built up. And in a lot of ways, because of their financial might, you could say, well, they could just go out and buy these players at another time in the future. But remember, unless the new CBA, there's a change, and that's not too far off, but we're not there now. The luxury tax threshold, especially with pitchers now making, elite pitchers making $35, $40 million, every pitcher out there making $15 to $20 million, just to pitch five or six innings, they're going to make $15 million. I mean, you laugh about David Peterson. If he's a free agent, he's going to make about $15 million a year. Just because he could get six innings, three runs. I mean, that's the bar. When you start to see those kind of numbers, hitters making $30, $35 million a year, long-term deals, contracts stretched out like credit card payments for double-digit years, you need cost-controlled players. You need what Vientos and Alvarez are giving you. What Vientos and Alvarez are giving you is huge because now you've got these cost-controlled, potentially significantly very good, maybe not elite, but very good offensive players in your lineup at a time when you have to maybe pay Pete Alonso or another offensive star to come over. So this is an interesting, and if I said the last week with the Subway Series and the Senga, debut and the fact that the Mets really, after bumbling around last weekend in Miami, showed you a little bit of something and kept themselves not only in the wild card firmly, but for a minute took the lead and now are kind of situated in the muck here as Minnesota comes to town, as they wrap up this homestand. This is going to be a very interesting next couple of days, and it's one of the first tests of the Stearns era. And make no mistake about it, no matter what Stearns does, he'll be criticized. Now, from a mainstream media perspective, I don't think he'll be criticized for making a big deal. He will not be criticized for making a deal. If he makes a deal like A.J. Preller did with San Diego for a starter or reliever of a big name and gives up a couple of top 15 prospects, the mainstream media, the WFAN crowd, the New York Post, none of those guys are going to criticize Stearns. This is not going to be like Jim Duquette when he acquired Victor Zambrano and Chris Benson and gave up Scott Kazmir during that time. This is not going to be the case. They're going to applaud him for going for it, for investing in this team. Now, outlets like mine and maybe some of the different independent sites that are really looped in and tied in the Baseball Americas of the world and X and those that have a subscriber content on X, they're going to be more critical of Stearns if he does something like that. And to me, if the edict is win now and win going forward, Stearns has to be extremely careful about what he gives up. You know, you could say, okay, just go out and give up Brett Beatty. It doesn't mean you just want to throw Brett Beatty to the Wolves. I mean, there's a chance that you might need Brett Beatty next year if Pete Alonso signs somewhere else. Vientos' future might be first base. J.D. Martinez is not going to be DHing forever. You don't even know if he'll be here next year. So, really, the question for Stearns here is, you want to invest in this club, he's already invested in this club. I think he's giving you a little inkling of the direction he's going, because for him to jump on Stanek so early, it's telling you that he didn't like the prices of the bullpen arms out there. It's telling you that. He jumped on Maton even earlier. These are not bad bullpen arms, and quite frankly, they're bullpen arms that, depending on, and we talked about this a couple of times over the last few weeks, when arms, you know, any bullpen arm comes over and switches teams, you saw it with Robertson last year, you don't know how they're going to perform. You just don't. So simply, you're taking a risk and rolling the dice. Forget all the numbers you've seen prior to the acquisition. You don't know if they're going to perform in the same way. You are uprooting and topsy-turving these guys, and you're putting them in a new spot, and they're going to need to get acclimated, and some get acclimated with no problem and very quickly, and some don't, and some never do. And we've seen that over and over again. I've given you examples. Eric Gagne with the Red Sox. We talked about the Larry Anderson deal back in the day for Jeff Bagwell, on and on. We've talked about that. So the real thing is, and here's the one thing I will tell you, what I would like to see. I would like to see Stearns try to upgrade this roster with another bullpen arm. I think that's important. I think he should try his best to look at the starter market. I think he has to have serious internal conversations about whether or not a Don Hamill or a Blade Tidwell could help in the bullpen. And Sproat, and what, even though he's in double A, can he help in any way, shape, or form? Is there some kind of way they can do that? And then I think they really need to look at Jose Buto and say, okay, Senga is out for the rest of the year. Perfect scenario would have been Senga back in the rotation. Mets have their six starters, and Buto stays at the pen. But now that's not reality. Do I really want to give up a Christian Scott, a Don Hamill, a Blade Tidwell in a deal for a Jack Flaherty, who's going to be here for 2 months, has had serious injuries, is having a good year, but, you know, even like Michael Lorenzen going over to Philadelphia last year, I know he had the no-hitter, he wasn't as good in Philadelphia as he was in Detroit. You have no idea how these guys translate over from a losing environment to a winning environment. There is so much risk, and none of that will be calculated through analytics. That's where the heartbeat of the game comes into play. And once those prospects go over, there's always going to be pain. You know, you could be sitting here a year from now and a Hamill is going out there pitching six great innings and is a great young piece for the Tigers, or if you give him up for a Fetty. And Fetty comes here and either, you know, doesn't work out or eventually leaves as a free agent. So he's truly a rental. And away you go. So to me, I think that's where the balance is. We are not schooled as scouts enough to know whether a Sproat, a Hamill, a Tidwell could help in any way, shape, or form this year. I don't think with the innings limits and the pitch limits, them coming up to be in the rotation is an option. Them coming in as bullpen options, that's different. I'll tell you the truth, the Adrian Hauser decision to designate him for assignment, I know you didn't, in hindsight, you had no idea Senga was going to hurt. That's painful because at least he could give you innings and piggyback on the days that these guys either don't have it or potentially. Now, maybe Alex Young becomes that guy now, but potentially that could be damaging. So you have to look at that because right now, the signs are from industry conversation, from deals that have gone down, from the behaviors of Stearns, the signs are right now telling you that this is an expensive market. I'm not sure the Mets want to pay the price to get the players. I'm not saying these players wouldn't be upgrades, but in the long run, are they that much of a difference where they were guaranteed one of the three spots in the wild card or guaranteed to have a better shot advancing past the Milwaukee, an Atlanta, a Philadelphia, or even if they get this far, the Dodgers? And the answer is I'm not so sure. Now, if a player is going to give you some control past this year, I think you think about it. And you have to really go right now with the projectability. They also brought a bunch of guys in recently with the draft. Do they like all the guys that were they inherited? That's the other thing. You know, maybe the Stearns regime, they don't maybe like all these guys. We really don't know. There's not a lot of leaks. But I do know this. If the Mets make a deal of significance, mark this on the calendar, is the only guarantee between now and Tuesday. It will create some pain for the fans that know their prospects. It will. Mark my words. 110%. This is an expensive market. These sellers are smart. They're getting smarter. It's getting harder to acquire in season, especially with the hard deadline now. A lot of your work, really, you have to start to do in the offseason, in my opinion, and maybe do it early in the regular season. I think that's why you've seen Stearns scour the waiver wire. And actually, with some of the value signings he's had since the winter, even though I said some of them went on to have better seasons, like a Michael Tonkin with the Yankees than they did with the Mets, they were kind of on to something. So that's the needle that the Stearns regime is going to thread. The first test of David Stearns and his staff, how they get through this first deadline when maybe it's a little unexpected about what a fortuitous position they are from a postseason perspective. They've been saying all along they expected to be here. But I think really, when you look at this team and you look at the vibe, you feel like if they got into a short series, that it's not crazy to think that they could win. Now, I don't think they could beat the Dodgers in a short series, and I think the Phillies would give them a hell of a time. But I think they could beat Milwaukee. And I think they could beat any of the wild card teams in a short series. With that said, I think they could lose to anybody, too. This is not 2022 where I felt like they were one of the top 3, 4, 5 teams to win a championship. But, and from a standpoint of their starting pitching, they will go into every series, probably for the most part, against most teams, if not every postseason team, saying, well, that opponent has a better rotation, especially now that Senga is not part of the equation. The Mets have depth of starting pitching, but I'm not sure that they certainly don't have an anchor and an ace, and they're not going to get one of those guys on that's available. I mean, Crochet to me is as close as you could get, and if you're going to get Crochet, then you're going to give up some serious talent. You better be right. You better make sure this guy's healthy. You better make sure this guy is going to be around more than a couple of years. You're investing, and maybe that's something that Stearns has to think about with some of these guys, because that guy is the best pitcher in baseball right now. Does that mean he's going to be, this a career year? I mean, Fetty and Flaherty are top 25 pitchers, starting pitchers in baseball. You know, Fetty was a guy that they almost signed this offseason, but he couldn't be guaranteed a spot. Imagine that, he couldn't be guaranteed a spot in the rotation. He very well might have been the Mets' ace this year. You know, good scouting, the Mets were bullish on him. You know, they might have to give up maybe you give up a Dom Hamill or a Blade Tidwell for him. You know, a guaranteed guy that's going to give you, you know, number three-ish, maybe low in number two performance. And with the cost of pitching and how volatile it is, there's some value. Do you really want to continue to make the mistake this offseason when Burns is available to give another contract? And it won't be a short-term deal like you did with Verlander and Scherzer, but give a long-term deal of 40-plus AAV to an elite pitcher when, you know, maybe you build a rotation with really good starters, a better offense, because offense is a little bit more predictable in terms of health, and you work on an elite bullpen. Yeah, that's part of the decision. So all these different things are coming at Stearns and his crew over the next 48 hours. They have a pretty good idea. You don't know. I don't know. All what I ask for with certainty, all that I could give you with certainty is, I think the Mets have to look at the long-term viability. Going all in on this club and putting every chip and blowing every asset for this club would not be what's out there, unless there's something that we don't know, would not be wise. Now, money, you want to take on, look, you even want to take on Blake Snell money for no prospect capital. That's just Cohen money. I know it's highly taxed. That's a different equation. To me, that's the first way I would go, is go, let me grab a Bassett. Let me grab a Barrios. Let me grab, you know, even Snell, who I don't love. Just getting Snell for money on a short term when he might opt out anyway, especially if he's big down the stretch and it's a big postseason, he's opting out, then you can say goodbye. You know, that to me would be, you know, that's just money. But it's also Cohen's money, and Cohen doesn't like to donate his money to a tax, I'm sure. So I don't know. You know, the Mets have a budget. I'm sure it's not limitless. But if Stearns comes to him and says, look, I could keep all our prospect capital, upgrade this team in a big way, but it's going to cost you 100% tax almost on a guy making $30 million a year in Blake Snell, well, you have to discuss it. Bassett would be a nice acquisition. He's got another year left. I loved him when he was here. I know that there's some controversy with how it ended for him. Barrios, I know that they were looking at him a few years back. Hefner knows him from the Minnesota days. He hasn't been the same since he left the Twins and went to Toronto. I mean, what do they see? I mean, they're going to see something in some of these guys that says, hey, I could work with it. But just to go out and get a Blackburn or a below league average guy just to have another arm, eh. I mean, maybe you have to do that because none of your kids in the minors now can be relied upon. But can you bring back, is there a way to undo the Adrian Hauser DFA? Can you just bring him back? I'm sure there is after the 10 days, right? Unless somebody claims him or he doesn't want to be back and wants to be a free agent. That's possible. He wants to go start somewhere and get his value up for a free agency run. So we'll see. But all right, that's part one of this week's show. We're going to take a break, and part two will be coming out. So if it hasn't popped up on Apple yet, don't worry, it's coming. I wanted to get this out to you first. And part two will be me talking about a lot of what we just outlined with Talking Mets podcast contributor, writes occasionally, David Mills does a lot of back end for me. He and I are going to talk about the Talking Mets top prospect list. First time we've done a foray into that. We'll talk about the deadline, what we're hearing, what we're seeing. Let's see if he agrees with my assessment of what I've outlined, how expensive this is, and how right now, if Stearns, just really quick, taking on money would be the most desirable way if you could get away without prospect capital. Number two would be a lesser deal in the same mold of what they've done so far to get a reliever or a starter in there. The most undesirable way would be to go all in and trade painful assets for, you know, even someone like a Crochet, which I think comes with a certain amount of risk. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, Talking Mets top prospect list and more deadline talk right after this.